It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The poorest folks living throughout our region are among the most vulnerable to more frequent natural disasters promised by climate change.
Well, we've had people that have had their homes washed away, and they will go right back and rebuild again because that's their land, that's all they've got, and they don't want to go anywhere else.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Kentucky and West Virginia are among the states with the highest emissions of carbon dioxide per person. They also help to block the federal government's most ambitious effort to fight climate change. Now, an analysis from the Centers for Public Integrity finds that those two states were among the ones most often hit by natural disasters over the past decade. Scientists warn that a warming climate makes extreme weather and disasters such as flash flooding more likely. Reporter Sydney Bowles takes us to Pike County in Kentucky's coal country, where vulnerable communities have suffered repeated flooding. It's a place where coal politics, climate policy, and catastrophe all connect.
Janie Cottle was on vacation when a flood destroyed her livelihood. She raced home from Tennessee, stopping only to buy rain boots.
The water was still so big, there was no road to walk on, so we had to go through the mountains.
Cottle's hair salon, her source of income, was completely destroyed. She turned to the Small Business Administration to help rebuild.
So I ended up borrowing $90,000, and I've got a payment now till I'm 92.
Doug Tackett is the emergency manager for Pike County. He was working that summer night in 2010 when Janie Cottle lost her salon. Emergency responders couldn't safely venture into the holler, Tackett said. They had to wait as water carried houses and cars away.
There was no way to get in Harless's Creek. You couldn't get in for the water.
As much as 7 inches of rain fell that night. More than 100 people lost property. In a rural county where more than a quarter of residents live in poverty, it was an especially heavy loss. Sadly, it's become a recurring event. From 2009 to 2018, Pike County saw 8 federal disaster declarations, and all of them included flooding. Along with other officials in Pike County, Tackett is doing a lot to prepare for the next flood.
There's mitigation projects where they've done buyouts. There's mitigation projects where they've elevated homes.
Climate scientists say a warming atmosphere is adding to the threat.
Kentucky has seen overall an increase in heavy rain.
Ken Kunkel is with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He says extreme rainfall events are already more common in eastern Kentucky and will likely become even more frequent as the climate warms.
Most of the time you can make stronger statements about just average conditions, but in this case we can make a stronger statement about the extremes.
And extreme rainfall events are more likely to cause floods. Kentucky is beginning to account for the effects of climate change in its emergency planning, but even as some officials prepare for climate change, the state is doing very little to prevent it.
Well, I've been proud to lead the fight ending the regulatory war on coal.
That's Kentucky's senior senator, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, speaking in front of the Senate this October. McConnell didn't respond to a request for comment on this story, but he's been a vocal proponent of the coal industry. And that's understandable. Coal is still a major force in Kentucky, and the industry holds a lot of political power. Elected officials in Kentucky and West Virginia, both coal states, fought a major climate change rule that could have hurt the fossil fuel industry. Those states were also among those most often hit by natural disasters in the last decade, generally powerful storms, the kind Ken Kunkel says are likely to get worse as climate change progresses. Since 2009, those two states combined have received a little more than $860 million in federal taxpayer money to clean up after disasters and prepare for future hits. Kentucky and West Virginia are among 4 states frequently struck by disasters in the last decade that collectively got nearly $2 billion. The other two states are Nebraska and Oklahoma. Those numbers account for 2 major FEMA funding streams that make up a big part of federal disaster aid.
It is fascinating to me. We know that the people that are going to be most impacted directly by climate change are going to be the people who are most vulnerable economically.
That's Michael Hendricks, a professor of public health at Indiana University Bloomington. He spent much of his career studying the health impacts of strip mining in Appalachia, and he said, in general, the states that have not taken climate change seriously tend to be in the Southeast.
They tend to be oppositional to climate change information. Which is disturbing to me, and because they're the ones who are really going to be hit the most by it.
Changes to the land can make mountain communities particularly vulnerable. Here's Janie Cottle's sister, Judy Casolino.
I know that coal mining had a whole lot to do with what happened up here.
Some of the mines above Harless Creek hadn't been properly reclaimed. One mine had been allowed to operate for 18 months without the proper permits. The state denies those mines had any off-site impacts, but both the state and the coal companies settled with the residents in court. And a hydrology study paid for by the Harless Creek residents as part of that court battle found that improper reclamation increased by nearly half the amount of water that flooded the holler. Some residents of Harless Creek moved away after that flood, but Janie Cottle still lives beside the little stream. She reopened her salon, and this time she built it 4 blocks higher off the ground. For his part, Doug Tackett isn't sure he believes in climate change, but he does believe in floods.
Well, we've had people that have had their homes washed away, not just once, but maybe twice in a particular flood event. And they will go right back and rebuild again because that's their land, that's all they've got. And they don't want to go anywhere else.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Sydney Bowles in Pike County, Kentucky.
This story was produced in partnership with the Center for Public Integrity. The Ohio Valley Resource is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. It's the time of year when people who love apples celebrate. Pennsylvania is the nation's 4th largest apple producer, but there's a new threat to the U.S.'s annual $4 billion apple industry. It's called Rapid Apple Decline, or RAD, and it has researchers stumped. West Virginia's largest apple producers aren't experiencing this decline, but in Pennsylvania, it's been a big problem. The Allegheny Front's Julie Grant reports researchers are trying to find out what's causing it.
Noah Petronic is worried about his apple trees. He's orchard manager at Sorgel Orchards in Wexford, just off the highway north of Pittsburgh. We start walking down a row of Braeburns. Most of the trees look healthy, with green leaves and bountiful pink fruit. But a couple have taken on a strange, rusty hue and are clearly struggling.
You can just see the first two trees you hit right here have shut down just over the past few weeks. We can walk through it here and I can point out about another 5 or 6 that are shutting down.
Petronic says he started noticing this around 2013.
You have beautiful crop on, you know, especially August, September, your apples are starting putting on color, size, especially your later varieties like Fuji and Braeburn and Johnnigold. And then all of a sudden you come back a week later and it would be dead.
Apple trees are actually made up of two parts that are grafted together. Growers choose a type of rootstock based on the soil or size of the trees they want, and then graft the apple varieties, the Braeburn or Golden Delicious, onto it. Petronic scrapes his boot along the bark of a dying tree just above the root.
You can see where the graft union is down there. That's just totally necrotic. It's rotting away. Looks like
they're using necrotic.
Necrotic. If we would peel it away, actually, you could actually see the rot.
That rot at the graft is the telltale sign of rapid apple decline.
This year, it's been horrible.
Carrie Peters is an associate research professor at Penn State's Fruit Research and Extension Center in Adams County. 70% of the state's apples are grown there. Peters has heard from around 50 Pennsylvania apple growers this year.
I've been so overwhelmed in 2019 by reports of massive tree die-off that it's been difficult to keep up.
Peters has been trying to get to the bottom of it. She and other researchers have looked at common apple problems like soil pathogens, viruses, and even rodents.
And everything came back negative. But the common thread with these declining or dead trees is that the collapse is at the graft union. The roots were perfectly healthy and the graft union was dying.
What researchers think they've learned so far, this is not an insect or a disease that spreads from tree to tree. A study by Cornell University published this year found that weather-related stress like drought and severe cold could be an underlying cause. But Peters doesn't think that's the whole story. She has other theories, including increased rainfall or certain herbicides. She says a variety of stressors could be working together to lead to rapid apple decline.
We just don't know.
Back at Sorgel Orchards, Noah Petronik shows me a new variety he just planted, Crimson Crisp, and then some 40-year-old stamen winesap trees. He takes a bite of the vintage variety.
It's just baffling. It's heartbreaking, really, because you're taking care of these trees, you know, for years and years, and all the care that you can give the tree, you know, and all of a sudden it just, you know, doesn't make it.
Petronik says farming isn't getting any easier, but to continue growing local produce for customers, orchards like his will have to learn to adapt to rapid apple decline. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
This week, as we approach Halloween, we have a few tales and legends that you, our listeners, have shared with us. John Kincaid, who lives in Putnam County, West Virginia, wrote about an event that happened when he was growing up in Fayette County, West Virginia.
Early one morning, about 4:30, Josiah came knocking home on his door. 'Twas the deadest of knocks in the deadest of night. It woke the whole family. Mom turned on the light. "Who is it?" she called. "It's Josiah, your son." Papa pulled on his pants. Little Annie went with a run. Mom looked at Pop. "How can this be? Josiah's miles away in the military. Why, he won't be home for 2 months or more, so how is he knocking now at our door?" Now when to the door Annie pressed hands and ear, she felt apprehension, a slight twinge of fear. "Is that you, Josiah?" "Yes, Annie, it's me. Now open the door and do it quickly." But when they opened the door, no one was there. Just the chill of the night with light fog in the air. "Mom, Pop," Annie said, with fear in her soul. "Josiah was here. But where did he go?" Later that day, the state trooper came, shook Papa's hand, called him a name. He said, "Jess, I think you better go get your wife." The news that he brought them cut like a knife. Josiah had gotten a short 3-day pass and set out on the road to hurry home fast. But his plans and his life would soon end in a flash when the car he was driving was involved in a crash. And the time that it happened, now folks, this may shock, was the same time that morning when they heard him knock. Yes, early one morning, about 4:30, Josiah came knocking home on his door to say goodbye to his kith and his kin, because he knew they would never see him again.
John Kincaid wrote that piece about what he says is a true story. That story is one of several tales about supposed hauntings and legends of monsters from across the Mountain State that is featured in the most recent episode of Inside Appalachia. Listen wherever you get your podcasts or find it at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.